Hi, everybody. My name is Sarah, and I work at Oxfam, and I just want to thank you all for still being here at 6:15. So I promise I will make this worth your while. I have no relationships to disclose except a lovely one with my husband, who is holding down the fort in Massachusetts right now. All right. So I just want to briefly talk about Oxfam and global health. Oxfam was founded 70 years ago in response to a famine in Greece, and we have three main pillars of work. The first one is humanitarian aid. So when there's a disaster, we're there working with community partners to save lives. The second pillar is long-term development work with communities. So looking for innovative solutions to agriculture, water, women's rights issues that will be able to set the stage for long-term community development. That said, we have affiliates in 17 countries, we have programs and offices in 92, but even if we were everywhere, there are still rules and laws that keep people trapped in poverty. So the third leg of our work is campaigning, advocacy, and policy work to change those rules and laws. So that's what I'm here to talk about today. All right, so one of the things that we do a lot of advocacy and campaigning on is effective foreign aid. So if you read the title of my talk, you will know how much the U.S. spends on foreign aid as a percent of our budget. How much? Less than 1%. All right. So at Oxfam, we talk about that. Basically, we say, I'm going to start again. So a lot of folks in Congress say, you know, we've got this huge budget deficit. We're going to solve it by cutting foreign aid. Well, cutting foreign aid to solve the budget deficit is like getting a haircut to lose weight. It is not fundamentally going to solve the problem that we have, but it is going to potentially exacerbate national security issues around the world. So that's what I want to talk about today. So we spend less than 1% of our government budget on foreign aid, but the American public actually thinks we spend much more. So a Kaiser Family Foundation study from last year found that Americans think we spend about 27% of our budget on foreign aid, and more than half of Americans think it should be less. How much do they think it should be? No.
5%.
Oh, up. They think it should be around 9-10%, 10 times the amount that we actually spend. So already we have this really interesting communications challenge with the American people. But generally, people do support foreign aid. And more than that, they really support global health. So that Kaiser Family Foundation study found that about half of people thought that we should spend less on foreign aid, but only 20% thought that we should spend less on global health. So global health is popular, and people get it. But again, this is a very bad time in Congress. We've got major budget deficits. We've got major challenges around the budget. And foreign aid is on the chopping block. So Oxfam is working really hard to try to find new levers and new avenues to make the argument around foreign aid. And one of the ways that we're doing this is looking at it through a national security lens. So what does that mean? What does it mean when I talk about global health and national security? There are two ways that you can define national security. There's probably multiple ones, but I'm going to use two in this case. And health fits in both. So the first one is a really strict definition of national security as looking at strictly military interventions and challenges. And global health fits into that. So troop health. You may not know this, but the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine was founded in part to make sure that British troops around the world during the colonial times had the right medicines for all sorts of tropical diseases that were hurting the troop health there. And one of the arguments, in fact, for combating HIV/AIDS in the late 1990s and early 2000s was that African militaries would be impacted by the epidemic. Infectious disease like SARS and H1N1 and bioterrorism, they're also things that are put in a sort of very strictly military zone and have to do with global health. But what I really want to talk about is global health and peace. The other definition of national security is really much more expansive. So this is it's an action or event that threatens to drastically degrade the quality of life for the inhabitants of a state or threatens significantly to narrow the range of policy choices available to government. So it's not just about military interventions. It's about things that impact people and things that make governments less stable. So we have to ask ourselves, what can we do to build government stability? What can we do to give people around the world dignity? What can we do? We can invest in global health systems. We can combat climate change. We can increase food security. We can support children and women around the world, and we can save lives. So I just want to pause right here and say I'm going to be using a national security frame throughout this talk, but I want to make it really clear, war is bad for public health. We've heard that from everybody up here. War is bad for women, it's bad for children, it's bad for service members, it's bad for communities. What I want to talk about is how global health is a bridge to peace and how promoting peace is the best way to guarantee national security and to keep us out of wars and conflict. So I just want to make that really clear. And indeed, peace was the foundation of all of our U.S. Aid work. So when President Kennedy founded USAID, he founded it on a platform of security and prosperity to prevent the collapse of developing country governments, which President Kennedy said would be disastrous to our national security, harmful to our comparative prosperity, and offensive to our conscience. That's lovely. There are other presidents who agreed with him. One president said U.S. assistance is essential to express and achieve our national goals in the international community, world order of peace and justice. Who said that?
Ronald Reagan.
No, but right side of the aisle, it was Nixon. So again, this is an issue and this is a lens that works on both sides of the political spectrum. And indeed, the Obama administration is looking at comprehensive national security through the three Ds: defense, diplomacy, and development. And Secretary Clinton is working really hard to bring these together. And we as a global health community have to work really, really hard to make development as legitimate a leg of this stool as the other two. So you mentioned in your presentation that $204 billion spent in the first phase of Iraq could have cut global hunger by half. Well, right now in Yemen, there's a major food crisis. Almost half of the population is hungry. 1 million children are facing starvation. Do we want half of the population of Yemen to be hungry? Is that in our national security interest? No. So let's help them build their food security so that we don't have to send in our military. So Secretary Clinton's working really hard on this, and this has been supported by a whole bunch of different secretaries of state. This is another lovely quote. International development is a vital investment to the free, prosperous, and peaceful international order that fundamentally serves our national interest. Another quiz, who said this? Which Secretary of State? Madeleine Albright? Nope, another lady, though. I love this PowerPoint functionality. It was Condoleezza Rice. So again, both sides of the aisle. So what do we talk about when we talk about international development, promoting peace, and national security? Oxfam worked with the Truman National Security Project to come up with a development manual that looked at 7 different ways that international development can promote national security. This is a whole presentation in and of itself, so your homework is to go online and read about all of these. But basically, international development can fight terrorism, reduce weapons proliferation, prevent sudden government collapse, mitigate refugee flows, fend off disease, climate change, and other threats, prevent conflict and genocide, and improve the way people around the world view America. These are all incredibly, incredibly important things that development does. So, in a nutshell, development saves lives, and it saves the blood and treasure of Americans. And again, it's not just development professionals who are saying this. This is one of my favorite quotes. I'm throwing quotes out there left and right. Former Defense Secretary Robert Gates said that development is a lot cheaper than sending soldiers. It contributes to stability and better governance. And if you're able to do those things and you're able to do them in a focused and sustainable way, then it may be unnecessary for us to send soldiers. I believe we have some folks in the military in the room, and I think that in reality the people who most want to find peace are the people who have to be on the front lines of war. And Robert Gates is someone who sent a lot of people into combat and who was really thoughtful about what that meant. So those are some frames, global health and national security. And now talking about government policy. How many people here have read the Global Health Strategy or have read the Global Health Initiative paperwork sort of in detail? Anybody? Okay, well, a lot of people in global health have read these two things. Read them again. They do have national security aspects to them. Well, if people didn't read those, I'm wondering how many people in the room have read the National Security Strategy, the QDDR or the QDR. You may not count. You count. All right. A couple of people. Good, good. So these are all security documents that concretely tie global health to national security. And they're things that public health practitioners and advocates should know, because there's important language in here that can help us have conversations with members of Congress who may be on the other side of this than us. So national security strategy and health. Obama administration's national security plan has what you might expect in a national security plan. It talks about the military, Iraq, and Afghanistan, but it also talks about prosperity, and it talks about values, and we need to use this language when we're talking to members of Congress. So this national security strategy talks about human rights, global health strategy, polio eradication, ensuring that new and fragile democracies deliver tangible improvements for their citizens. And health is certainly one of them. Climate change and food security are all in the national security strategy. Eric Goosby has said that the QDDR is a reminder of how important advancing global health is to our economic and national security strategy. And global health is one of the six main pillars of that, that review. And finally, the Quadrennial Defense Review of 2010 put climate change, which is a public health issue, directly into the national security framework. I'm going to go back for a second. So again, it's really important for public health advocates to know these policies and to know the ways that they connect global health, national security, and peace. So just to give you a sense of how Oxfam uses these tools, we use that framework of seven different impacts from the Truman National Security Project. We use these different policies, and we try to do research around them. So we've done research with the Center for Naval Affairs, looking at climate change and humanitarian aid and how climate will impact the military's ability to promote peace around the world. We've worked with the Truman National Security Project on that development manual and on other reports. They're a great organization. You should check out their website. And a lot of other organizations do look at the link between global health and national security, including the Center for Strategic International Studies. So there's a lot out there, but we need more. And we as a public health community need to figure out ways to talk about how our work concretely relates to peace and to national security. So what do we do with all of this? How do we make change in Congress? Oxfam builds partnerships with progressive veterans groups. So we don't have any direct ties to the military, and just as an FYI, we don't take U.S. government funds for any of our humanitarian, any of our work. But there are really phenomenal veterans groups out there, people who served in Iraq and Afghanistan who can talk about how better health systems, more food, less hunger, would actually make their jobs easier. And that development is a really key way to promote peace around the world. So we partner with a variety of different vet groups, and we do a lot of outreach to Congress. So we do fly-ins and lobby days. And I'll give you one or two examples because I think I'm running out of time. But we bring together what we call strange bedfellows, which if you really analyze that phrase, it's disturbing, but we use it again. I'm going to keep using it. We bring together veterans. We bring together with faith leaders, with politicians at the state level, with women's rights leaders. And so together they're able to tell a really compelling story that no congressman is going to be able to totally deny. And it opens a lot of doors for us. So, for instance, International Women's Day this past year, we brought 70 leading American women to D.C., and we had delegations from 30 different states. And the one from Wisconsin was made up of the former lieutenant governor, an Iraq war veteran who was able to really talk about her experience in that conflict, and the head of the Milwaukee Food Policy Council, who was able to talk about food security in the U.S. and abroad. And so those three women went to the Wisconsin delegation, and they were able to meet with, I think, at least directly with two members of Congress, and their stories together were really compelling. We've also had fly-in days just for veterans, looking at advocating for climate and health in the Defense Authorization Act. We also do media, and we also do in-district work in select states where there are important senators or congressmen who are on all of the right committees for global health, which is mainly, most often, appropriations for Senate and Foreign Ops. Yes. So one of them is Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is senator in... All right, South Carolina. So we've done a lot of work in South Carolina with the media, community events, meeting with his office. South Carolina has a big military tradition, and he responds very well to the national security argument, and he's actually a real supporter for foreign aid. And so when you have someone like that, you need to support them, and you need to show them that they've got support in their state. So we've brought together, again, veterans, women, the private sector, and religious leaders in South Carolina. To really push him to be an advocate for global public health. So I'm going to end with a quote from him, which I think puts a lot of this into perspective. So he said to Foreign Policy last year, to the American taxpayer, we need to be investing in improving people's lives before the terrorists try to take over. Stay ahead of them, not with 100,000 troops all the time, but by partnering with people who will live in peace with us. The worst nightmare for Al-Qaeda is to come into a community that feels supported and has hope. And all of you practice public health, what does public health give people? It gives people hope. And hope promotes peace, and peace promotes national security. Thanks.
What's the website for the presentation? What's the website?